Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
Good as that theme music is, I think the three of us, if we got together, we could probably do better. We could get Bobby the Bull into a jug. I'll play this one. A spoon.
That's good. Washboard.
Do a scrubboard for a saw. I'm in that mood because I just got through watching 3 days, 3 nights of Hatfields and McCoy.
Wasn't that good, man?
Yes, it was, but it I was disappointed. They didn't go far enough. I was waiting to see Speedy Hatfield on there. he didn't take it as far as to how the Hatfields got into Oklahoma and got mixed up with the Welches. Now, there's a family feud I want to hear about.
That'd be better than the Hatfields and McCoys, I promise you.
But that was a very – and it's – I can't wait. They're already advertising the Blu-rays coming out on July 24th, so I'm going to have to pick that up.
Yeah, they, I seen today on the, I guess I was scrolling through Facebook, I saw where Bo James is going to be in West Virginia this weekend. boy's braver than I am.
He's already performed in front of some Hatfields and McCoys.
Jeez.
In that area. Well, he was in Philadelphia or somewhere in Pennsylvania last week. He had Misty Warren. I think they did like four states up this way. Blessing. I'm so glad to see somebody that can still make a living doing, you know, the only person I know besides him that ever was able to do that was Ted Allen.
Yeah.
And Ted was, you know, he thought nothing of being in three or four different states in 2 days. And I'm so glad that Bo's carrying on that tradition.
Probably and I'm glad it's him and not me.
Me and you both.
Jerry, I know you miss it.
I do.
You would love to be in West Virginia one night and Philadelphia the next night and St. Louis the next night.
I've done Atlanta in the morning, Detroit that night, the next night, Kansas City. I've packed it around. We all have. Didn't think anything about it.
I never was that bad. The most I ever did was do Birmingham in the morning, do Atlanta TV, go to Chattanooga, and then try and find some hole in the wall, VFW hall, somewhere in the wilds of Alabama on the way home. Get one last match.
Jeez.
After Chattanooga, TV.
I did a business trip for Barnett one time. I left Atlanta early in the morning, and I flew to Minneapolis. And a guy picked me up at the airport and went downtown. We had a meeting. He took me back to the airport. I flew from there to Chicago. Guy met me at the airport there and had a meeting. Got back on the plane, flew back to Minneapolis, guy picked me up, we went back downtown, finished up business there. I was supposed to spend the night, but we got through a little early, and snow was about hubcap deep on a Ferris wheel, and I wanted to come home, so I got him to take me back to the airport, and I flew home. So I did that all in one day, and that liked to kill me, and I didn't take any bumps in between.
Other than getting on and off the airplane.
Oh, geez. Well, it was worth going because I got to go to O'Hare Airport. That was my one and only trip. I thought Atlanta was bad. O'Hare, that's like a circus without a tent up there.
It sure is.
Oh, geez. What a wild place that was.
think the worst airport, and the airport itself wasn't that bad, but just the craziest airport I've ever been in was LaGuardia. I don't think either one of you have ever been there.
They're all madhouses.
Oh. Well, Atlanta's got a new international terminal. It cost something like, I forget what the cost was. It went way over budget for what they originally projected it was going to be. And I read, they opened it on the 16th of May, and I read where they've already had so many screw-ups over there. They're having to put, it's on the other side of the airport, and they're having to put people in shuttle buses and take them back over to the old terminal and let them fly out of there because there's so much going wrong at the new terminal they can't get the flights in and out.
They just about run out of room there, haven't they?
It's crazy.
Well, it's already, I mean, they've got, when I was down there 3 weeks ago, or whenever it was, 4 weeks ago, when I was in for my daughter's graduation, that's the first time I've been to the Atlanta airport, other than to pick somebody up curbside, in 15, 16 years, first time I'd ever flown in or out of there. And, you know, I'm looking to go get a rental car, and they put me on the show. I think I'm at Disney World. I'm riding the train.
Yeah, you had to ride the train over to the new rental car place, yeah. It's completely off airport property.
Yep. I'm thinking I'm going to pass through the International Hotel here in a minute and see some shrubs shaped like Mickey Mouse.
Mickey Mouse, yeah.
I thought I was in Disney World.
And I'll tell you something else. This is not gambling. This will be a sure thing. You can bet if Bobby Simmons flies out of Atlanta Airport, whatever of those concourses I go to, where it's A, B, C, or D, my gate's going to be the furthest one away from that train.
Every time.
Yes, sir. I've never landed close. I'm always way down at the end. Even before they rebuilt. Jerry, you remember flying out of Atlanta before they rebuilt the airport when it used to have those little round concourses, but you had to walk about 2 miles to get to them?
Exactly.
I was always in one of those. Never was I at a gate up near the terminal.
Never. They must have known we were coming.
I guess. I think that's why I was the airport that amazed me the most out of any I've ever been to was Tampa back in the 70s. You would fly into those little pods, but they were connected by the trains.
Yeah.
The little cable cars or whatever they were, but you didn't have to walk. It actually took you from place to place, which I thought that was neat.
When I was a teenager, I used to spend all my summers down there. It was nothing for me to just go to the airport and spend the afternoon sitting there watching people. That was the neatest place in the world for me was the Tampa airport.
Well, that's a sideshow going to the airport watching people now.
Oh, yeah.
A freak show, man.
Oh, man, now that I get into an airport, all I can think about is getting out of there. I don't even want to sit around and look at people. But you're right, like when I flew back in, when I left Atlanta to fly back to Philadelphia, I wasn't sure how long it'd take me to turn my rental car in or where I was going to be or how long it'd take me to get to security. So I got there about 2.5 hours ahead of time. And naturally, I'm that far ahead of time, I breeze right through.
Of course.
So I spent a lot of time, I think two or three flights went out and came through that gate I was sitting at the whole time I was there. And the weirdest thing, this guy had a dog with him that was in, it looked like it was just in a duffel bag. It wasn't any kind of animal carrier because the dog kept barking. It was a pit bull pup. And he was flying back to Philadelphia, and I'm thinking, you couldn't find a pit bull in Philadelphia. You had to fly all the way to Atlanta to get one and stuff it in a duffel bag and fly back with. But he put him up in the overhead carriers, and that dog parked until the plane started taxiing to the run, and then he shut up, heard it again. I'm thinking, that poor dog smothered in there, died of a heart attack or something. Oh. But I guess there wasn't any regulations. This lady looked at me after the dog had been barking a few minutes. We were sitting at the gate. And she said, "You have a dog?" I said, "Ma'am, I've been sitting here for 2 hours. Have you heard a dog bark?" I said, "Behind me's got the dog." Here's your sign. Oh, I guess you guys heard about Holly Smith. Passed away Saturday.
Yeah.
And, yeah, you worked with him. Didn't you wrestle him one time in Florida?
Mike, I defended myself for about 8 minutes. I don't know if you can use the word wrestling or, you know, all I hope is that Frank Kickey never had that pleasure. If he thought I was something, I don't know what he'd have thought of Hans Smith.
I never had the pleasure, but Charlie Smith told me that's the stiffest, hardest guy to work with he'd ever seen.
Well, I tell you what, I was a young buck breaking in the business, and I worked with him on Tampa TV. And if I'd have known what I know now, he wouldn't have done that to me.
Jeez.
It was, I mean, it. I don't know. I don't know if he worked with everybody that way.
One out of seven.
It was absolutely. I wonder who broke him in.
I don't know. You know, I don't know if I've read, out of all the things I've read since he passed away, I don't know that I've read where who trying to get him broke.
I don't think anybody would admit to that.
Oh. Jeez.
Well, it was awful. Was you ever around him, Bobby?
No, I never had a chance. I mean, I've seen him as a kid. I've seen him when he come through and worked here, but I didn't, you know, I was never in a ring with him, never met him.
Oh, my God.
I just, we got to talking. I guess we was at one of our little get-togethers, and we were talking about different people. And I asked me, I think we were talking about Germans. And, you know, Waldo Von Erich, I was in the ring with him a lot of times. You know, he seemed to be okay. Jim Raschke, Baron von Raschke, he was, you know, he's clumsy.
Oh,
he just had to stay out of his way. But, you know, nicest guy in the world. But I asked about Schmidt, and that's when Schmidt talked. Schmidt said he was awful. He said he would kill you.
It was awful. It was something else.
He and Dromo ever worked with one another. Can you imagine the stiffness in that?
Oh, jeez. The thing about Dromo is Dromo's only stiff when he wants to be.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's aggravating you more than anything.
I don't think this old poor fellow could help it.
Well, that's what I've heard.
His gimmick was.
I may have told you this story, Jerry, but you'll appreciate this because you know Bill. Charlie Smith promoted a town one time, and he called me and asked me if I wanted to work. And I said, yeah. I said, what do you want me to do? He said, well, I want you to wrestle. He said, I want you to wrestle under Hood. And I said, well, who am I going to wrestle? He said, Bill Dromo. I said, I'll be there. So I go to the little old town. I think it was Conyers, somewhere right here close. Anyway, I go to the town. I walk in the dressing room, and I got this mask on. And I hadn't seen Bill in a year or two, you know. And I walked in, and I didn't speak to nobody. I just went over in the corner, and I dropped my bag. And I cut my eyes already. I mean, he's looking. And didn't say a word. I just went over and got dressed. And we, you know, never said anything to him. Finally, Charlie came in there, and he said, I see you guys in the shower. And I went, yeah, and I went in there, and he said, I'd like you to put Bill over, you know, about 8, 10, 12 minutes, whatever's comfortable for you guys. And says, is it okay with you? And I went, yeah. And so when Schmitty left, Nick Patrick was, might have been Nick. I can't remember who was refereeing. But anyway, I turned to Bill, and I said, hey, pal, I said, I'll tell you what we'll do. I said, we'll lock up. I said, you grab a headlock. I said, I'll shoot you in and backdrop you. I said, when you get up, I'll slam you twice real quick. I said, then I'll drop an elbow. I said, cover you, you kick out. And he looked, he never said anything. He looked at me. He reached over and he grabbed, I had a T-shirt on. He grabbed me by my T-shirt. He picked me completely up off the floor and threw me against the locker. He said, let me tell you something. Here's what we're going to do. I raised that mask up and I went, it's me.
And you didn't, you hadn't done any of that yet, have you?
So listen, he shot behind, we locked up, and he shot behind me and rode me like a horse. I finally made it to the ropes. Now, Charlie Smith was refereeing, and I looked at Charlie, and I said, would you tell Bill Gotch this is a work? Oh, that was a lot of fun.
He was flashing back to his assistant, Dave.
Jeez.
He thought he was Stanislaus.
You know, me and Charlie Smith, we got everything. We deserved everything we got because we used to beat that poor guy unmercifully. Oh, God. Somebody'd back him in the ropes, and we'd go to break him up, and we'd tap the other guy, and, buddy, I'd hit him so hard he'd pop. Scream at him, turn that man loose. Ooh.
You knew you had a payday coming, though.
Listen, brother, he got me in a battle royal one night. I was working under a hood, and he went out first, and I thought he was gone. And I relaxed. I had run from him for about 10, 12 minutes. And whoever was in the ring, he had already worked the deal out. They locked up with me and backed me into a corner. And he went about halfway up the aisle and turned around, came back. And when he hit me in the back between my shoulders, I thought the ring had fell on me. And I turned around and looked, and he just standing there, you know, and he walked off.
Somebody else actually passed away a week before Porter George Jr. did, and I failed to mention it last week on the show. And, Gary, I don't know if you knew this guy. Bobby, I know you knew him because he was a cop in Atlanta before he got into wrestling business. That was Buddy Diamond.
Yes. Yes, I sure did. I was around when he broke in.
Did I know him, Bobby?
You know, Jerry, you might have met him. I don't know. He was a police officer, city of Atlanta. He became friends with Rocky Johnson. And if I'm not mistaken, Rocky trained him, or Rocky had a hand in training him and broke him into business.
Familiar.
Yeah, he had been around. He worked around for, I don't know, that must have been in the 70s when he broke in.
Yeah.
Last time I saw him was at the Gulf Coast Reunion, 2 years ago, I guess?
Yeah, I think I don't think he did. I know he worked most of his career in Tennessee. Did he come back and work in Georgia, any?
You know, I think he passed through a time or two. You know, nothing major, but, you know, maybe a week or two here and there.
And also, I don't know if you guys have heard this, but Ken Lucas' son passed away, right? The one who's been
heard of that.
Yeah.
Dude, you did the last time I emailed you Ken's phone number. You did get it this time.
Yes, sir, I did. Thank you.
I got you the number. I can't make him answer the phone.
That's right.
But Phil Bowman for me Friday night left me a message about it, and then I played phone tag all day. I finally talked to Bill on Sunday, and this is, of course, the one that was in the car wreck. Well, I guess it's been 3-4 years ago now, if not longer. And had his good days and bad days, but he had gone, lost his vision and everything. And so as sad as it is, it may be. You know, we're going to lose a child, especially. It's been weighing on Ken for a long time and had to deal with that.
So. Well, you hate to see him suffer like that, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's one of those things where you feel guilty because you do have a sense of relief. I mean, just, I don't know how he feels. Don't want to know how he feels,
but
I just can't imagine having to go to a nursing home every day to see my child.
No,
that's a little much.
Was he like in a vegetative state, Mike, or?
Pretty much, yeah, pretty much. You know, like I said, I think he had some days that were better than others. And everything, but I know he was totally lost his vision. And,
how old was he?
I don't know. I would say probably late 30s, early 40s, maybe. Maybe not that old. I'm not sure. I'm not even sure which. Ken had two sons. I'm not sure which of them was the older or the younger. But up until he had the car wreck, he had a little cafe or something there in Pensacola because one Sunday I went over and visited Ken at the flea market, and this had been several years ago. Ken said, well, just hang around, and then the flea market closes down, we'll go over to the cafe or something to eat or something. I didn't sit around at home, but, and then I didn't hear anything about him until the car wreck. Before Ken, I mean, you know, both his parents, his wife, you know, now his son, he's been through it, man. He has been through it. And just, you know, what a great guy, though. What a great guy. I wouldn't give anything for the weekend before I left to start back on the road. Bowman, Roberto Soto, and I went over to see Ken. Just an hour and a half, 2 hours over there with him, just, you know, just like we do here, telling lies and beating the world. I think between the four of us, we beat everybody in the wrestling business that there was to be beat.
Well, of course, that's the best way to do it.
I don't think we left anybody unscathed.
What did y'all do to me?
Yeah,
I'd met him, yeah. Yeah.
Probably known him through
the big. He was the biggest rubber I've ever been around.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And loved rubber snakes.
Yes, I know about that.
Well, I told you, and I may have told you guys, I'm sure what he did to Soto, who was there over his trailer. He's got this big dog that he's got, and the dog is probably 20, 25 years old, and that's around the house, and everything boiled dog pitiful. But Ken told Soto, he said, that's the smartest dog in the world right there. And Soto said, what do you mean? He said, tell him bark at the cows. And Soto looked at it funny. You guys both know Soto, so you know that look he gets on his face. And Ken said, no, I'm serious. Tell him to bark at the cows. So Soto came to the hog, and finally he said, bark at the cows. The dog didn't do anything. And Soto said, see? And Ken said, there are no cows here.
I know that got over with Soto.
You can see the smoke coming out of his ear. Oh, man. That was fun. And I did get a little bit of good news today.
I hope so. After all this.
I got a note from Bob Kelly that evidently Florence Fields is no longer in need of chemotherapy.
Very good.
But she is done with chemo. So.
Very good.
So that's good news. So. Hopefully that situation will turn around. But,
Any news on Don? Is he doing any better, any worse?
Not the same.
Okay.
That was one of the things I had asked Bill about. Because he had gone, they had a Gulf Coast reunion meeting on Saturday.
You drove down, didn't you?
Yeah, I made sure we broke down.
I know Charlie went.
No, that was from Massachusetts down there. I caught a flight down there for that. But he was talking about them that the kid asked about Don, and it's about the same. And actually, at that point, Florence wasn't doing that well. She had, I guess, had gone through her last round of chemo, and she was not doing well. So hopefully, Now she won't have to go through that this anymore. She'll gain her strength back up and beat this thing after this long, drawn-out run with it. Well, that's all the news that I've got. What have you guys got?
I haven't done much of anything except work and stay around the house.
Been quiet on my end.
Well, I've enjoyed my time up here in Massachusetts. This has been interesting because I've never been up in this part of the country before. There's so much to go and see. I went Saturday to Fall River, Massachusetts, which for the uninitiated, that is that town's biggest claim to fame as being the home of Lizzie Borden. And the house that she did or didn't whack her parents in is now a bed and breakfast. And you can stay in the house in the room where the old lady got killed, so if you wish to spend the night there. But it's a museum, and I went there and toured it and went over to the house that she lived in from 1893 when she was acquitted until her death in 1927, which is another old Victorian. I wouldn't really call it a mansion, but it's a huge house.
Did she do it or didn't she do it?
Nobody knows. I mean, my gut feeling is she probably did, but if she did, she did a very good job on it because, of course, this was back before the days of CSI and all that type stuff, but she had no blood on her, which the mother was killed an hour and a half before the father was. They did determine that, so she had time to cover all that up, but then her father was killed within 15 minutes of coming home. And how she covered her, had no blood on her, get the murder weapon and all that stuff in that short amount of time, I have no clue. But evidently the fine folks of New Bedford, Massachusetts didn't think she did it, but they quit. So didn't have to, she spent 10 months in jail awaiting her trial.
How old was she when this supposedly happened?
31 or 32. And she lived another 30-something years after that. I think she was 64, 67, something like that when she died.
I went to my mailbox every day, looking for a little rubber axe, but so far nothing's come.
Well, I started to get you a box of axe-shaped cookies. They do sell those. I told your wife I saw a bumper sticker that I started to get her, but I didn't. It said, I learned everything I know about anger management from Lizzie Borden.
Oh, man.
But it's an interesting place. You said, I'm planning on going to Salem on Saturday afternoon if it's not raining real bad. And you guys have heard of the House of Seven Gables, right?
Yes.
Well, that house is actually in Salem, Massachusetts, and they've moved onto the property of that house. They've moved in Burthall. I've never read the book or ever seen the movie or anything like that, but I've heard of the House of Seven Gables my whole life, and I just thought it would be neat to go to that. Maybe go find a witch trial or something. I'll find something to do.
And, I'm sure you will.
Sunday I'm going to the Tom Burke Professional Wrestling Museum in Springfield, Massachusetts. I thought there's been emailing Tom back and forth, and we're going to hook up Sunday afternoon. I'm going to ride up over to his house. It's about an hour and a half, 2 hours from here. I'm going to go by and see him and see what all he's got, which, according to Al Friend, is quite a bit. Get his own museum there, so I'm going to do that and have dinner with him or something like that. Back to the circus.
When's your shows?
They're here in Marshfield on the 18th and 19th of June, and then we're in Plymouth on the 20th and 21st.
Okay.
So, I've gotten everything done. I finished up with my permits and everything today. Everything's lined up. I've done my press releases. I've done my my clown letters to the schools and daycare centers and stuff like that. So that's what I'm going to spend the rest of this week and next week on.
Well, Mike, where you are and wherever, say, Ronnie is or whoever, is it just the actual one circus itself?
Yeah. We only have one show for travel. They just finished up in Kingston, New York. I thought the build on yesterday. He just moved a few miles because he was staying in Fishkill when he did Kingston. Because Kingston booked to Fishkill. Ronnie's also in Fishkill still because he's doing Wappinger Falls in Middletown. And so his shows haven't come up yet. Bill just finished his shows. He's now doing Monticello, which is the first town I did last year. And so he just moved from Fishkill, New York to Middletown, New York, which is 15, 20 miles
different. So each one of you go how far in advance to a town?
It depends. The shortest amount of time that I've ever been anywhere has been like 3.5 weeks. This one here has been the longest I've ever been anywhere, mainly because they planned on me going to another town and it fell through. So they went ahead and moved me here. I'm going to wind up being here 5 weeks. But generally it's 3.5, 4 weeks.
So you're doing leg work for that length of time, right?
Yeah. I come in and basically you touch base. The first thing I normally do is touch base with all the media people that we bought ads from or, what's supposed to be running news. Let them know that I'm in town. If anything they need, call me. Then I set up with whoever. If I have a sponsor in town, I meet with my sponsor. If not, I meet with whoever the property owner or property manager or whatever a lot is. And if I've got more than 2 pounds, then I'm, obviously do both. And, I don't mind. It's pretty neat to have 2 pounds, back-to-back, which generally I do. But, like, last year when I was in New Jersey, I had Willingboro, and then there was, like, a week and a half gap before I had my next stop, but I didn't move. I stayed one place in between.
Well, how far a jump does the circus actually make when it goes from one place to another?
It depends. Anywhere from 250 miles to, like last year, they left Louisiana, went to Albany, Georgia. it just depends. When I've got them, they're gonna move 12 miles.
12 miles.
Yeah, near Plymouth. And these are both, it's two cities or two towns in the same county, but they're so different. And they're far enough apart to where it's, because Plymouth is actually close, it's more on the bay and further down, it's closer to Cape Cod than where Marshfield is. Marshfield is still on the ocean, but it's up a ways, it's up the coast of it.
And how many shows do you run per town?
Depending on what days of the week, I'll have 4 shows here and then 4 in Plymouth. So I'll have 8 shows all together. Because I'm during the week. I'm not heavy for the week, but on Saturdays we run 3 shows a day on Saturday. It's 2 shows a day every day, except on Saturdays we run 3 shows.
Wow.
Yeah, we've got time between shows. Our shows are 1 hour and 45, 1 hour and 50 minutes. We've got just enough time to get everybody out of the tent, totally cleaned up, blown out, everything reset, and we'll let people back in for the next set. And as we're finishing a town, as they are doing the last show, as they are breaking down stuff, they're already loading stuff. like the whatever props we use for the opening act. Once it's done, they'll break it down and load it. They don't have to work resetting.
Tom Morello, the Night Watchman, Guitar Center Sessions. You know, I was just sitting there thinking, you know, you're up there and you're able to see a few things, and I encouraged you to do that, but how many places did we go where there's no telling what we could have seen, but we just, I mean, I'm speaking for me now. We never did.
Ole and I talked about that one afternoon. We was in Baltimore walking down the street looking at the old buildings and all. He says, you know, people save up a lifetime or all year to do what we do in one day, you know, and we didn't take advantage of it.
No, we didn't.
None of us did. None of us. Most of us didn't. We took it for granted, Bobby.
Well, I was sitting here thinking, you know, I don't know what popped this into my head, but maybe the last time I did anything like that with anybody in the business was me and you and Ted and Charlie went through Graceland.
Sure did. I mean,
I remember going through there thinking a guy with that kind of money had that poor taste.
Well, that was back then. That was.
I guess.
I mean, but I remember you picked us up at the airport. You said, we can go to the hotel at Graceland. I said, I'm going to Graceland.
Yep.
That's where we headed. I'm glad I did.
The jungle room, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, for back then, that was, you know, of course, today, you know, that was how you got something today. 30 years from now, it'll be out of whack, you know?
That's true.
I'm out of whack now.
Well, they say clothes are, you know, they go in cycles, so I'm keep hoping I'm going to live long enough for my clothes to come back in style.
You're still wearing them whether they do or not, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I have a hope chest. I put my summer clothes in this winter and hope they fit next summer.
But you guys think about it, especially here, like when you were in Kansas City, I mean, you worked every night somewhere, and during the day, you know, you normally, you know, get in late, so you slept to the gym to work out, and then by the time you got all that done, you were headed to the next.
That is correct.
Got shot, so I can see where you would have. I see Kansas City, if I'd have ever made it to Kansas City, I'd have had to go find some of the jazz club there, because there's such a rich history of jazz music in Kansas City. That's where Count Basie was from. Jay McCann, people like that. I would have.
Well, it's not just in the business and traveling, but even, I mean, people come to Atlanta, or people come to visit, and you talk to them, and you know that you know, and they start telling you how wonderful it is to go to Stone Mountain, or how wonderful it is to go to this or that. And Jerry was talking about the same, you know. How many millions of people come to Savannah to go to the St. Patrick's Day Parade, and you live there and couldn't pay you to go over there?
That's right. And I live right across from the Wilmington River. And I look at that. I have to go across it every day going out to Tybee.
Uh-huh.
And I look at that water all the way, you know, this water almost, not all the way out there, but quite a bit the way out there. And I always look at it. Some people never look at that water. They don't see it.
Yep.
And I'm thankful I can see it every
day.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, I feel blessed that I can see it, you know. But the people, they live here and go other places.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't even appreciate what's here. They don't see it.
My brother, before he passed away, lived in New Smyrna Beach, Florida. And it's actually the only city that I've ever been to in my life that I would want to live in other than Atlanta. And I say that because I don't actually live in Atlanta anymore, but I'm close enough that I go to work there every day. This is home. This is where I've been my whole life. But New Smyrna Beach is just south of Daytona. It was on the other side of the bay. There's no amusement parks. There was no strip that people rode up down. It was mostly condos and actually homes where people lived. And right south of there was Canaveral National Seashore, which was like 15 miles of Gilligan's Island. I mean, I loved to go down there to my brothers, and I would go over to Canaveral Seashore, and I'd walk early in the morning because there was nobody there. And I loved it. Well, he lived there. He was, I don't know, a quarter mile from the beach. every year when it got time for vacation, he loaded in the car, came right through Atlanta, and went to the mountains north of us up North Carolina.
Isn't that something?
You know, I mean, he just, I think we, I guess we're just, we get used to it, I guess. And you just want something different. I don't know. But there's places right here in Atlanta that I've never been to and have lived here all my life.
I'm sure. I mean, that's just, I don't know why it's that way.
Yeah, I was like, when I first moved to Atlanta, I wanted to do everything there was to do. I went to Stone Mountain several times a year, and went to Braves games, went to Falcons games, did all that stuff. I went to one Hawks game, I think. I'm not even sure if I did that. I never had been into basketball, but you know, it was the same way. After about 5 years, I'd pretty much done everything, and I didn't, you know, other than I went to go see the Braves several times a year up until about 95, 96, something like that. And then I quit doing that. And, you know, it's just to get settled. It was rare because I lived in Gwinnett County, and everything, Gwinnett County had grown up so much and had everything, there was no need to even go into Atlanta. And Bobby, I'm sure it's the same way. If you didn't go work in Atlanta, you probably wouldn't go into Atlanta either, except
no.
Church.
On the weekends, I avoid it. I mean, I have to go, you know, the church is down. It's not downtown, but it's closed. But I don't even go to McDonough. I'm 11 miles from McDonough on the weekends. Here in Henry County, traffic has gotten so bad, you don't want to go anywhere.
You know, I never got that. I think I mentioned to you the last time I saw you, Bobby, when I was in Atlanta. I still, if I go to Atlanta, no matter how, either going in or leaving, I've got to go through downtown. The skyline of Atlanta is still the most beautiful sight in the world. Always has been, always will be. Still, you know, my favorite city in the entire world, and followed closely by New Orleans. But I still love Atlanta. I do. And hopefully one day I'll be back there.
The thing in the wrestling business, the highlights of the wrestling business was, and you could always, you didn't have any problem finding them. You just asked somebody that lived there that was in the business. They always knew where the buffets were. I wonder how many buffets have been shut down or guys have been barred from going because of, you know, stupid stuff. Rocket told me one time there was a place between Chattanooga, and I can't remember where he said it was, but he said you worked somewhere and you went, you had to leave and come toward Chattanooga or something. And he said there was a buffet, and he said it was very reasonable, and he said everybody ate there and the food was good. And he said some of the guys got caught stuffing chicken in their pockets, and they told
no.
them to come back.
No.
So, you know, it was just no telling how many of these places got screwed up. But everybody always knew. It's like there in Savannah, that boarding house. Unless you know where it's at, you'll never find it. I mean, I don't know that
there.
I can find it again.
Still there.
Place in, there used to be one in Macon. And I know you probably ate at this place, too. It's not there anymore. But did you ever eat at Sweat's Barbecue?
I can't tell you how much barbecue I hauled out of there. You know, I asked somebody about Sweat's 2 days ago, and they don't think it's there anymore.
It's not there anymore.
It's
last
not.
Time I was down that way, I got it. It was right there at Soberton.
That is correct.
Where the interstate used to end. And I got off and I went down there, and because I'd been bragging about it, and it's not a restaurant anymore. It's some kind of business. But yeah, they're out of business.
They were something else.
Yep.
Well,
I mean, that was when we had to go to Savannah and had that 100 miles of two-lane road.
Yeah, wasn't that fun?
Oh, geez.
Well, have y'all heard Flair's going back to New York?
No, I haven't.
I saw that on the internet.
I don't know. He needs to go somewhere. I mean, he can't not work.
Well, if the stories I have read are true, he is in such financial straits. He's one step ahead of the way from jail, and he's got to do something.
They said he's been missing house shows for him up there for P&A, and I don't know.
Sad.
He's got to be worn out.
I did see something else, too, that kind of bothered me a little bit. I seen where WWE released Tom Pritchard.
I saw that. What was that about, Bobby?
Who knows? I heard that the guy that used to do it before Pritchard took the gig is coming back to do it again.
What was he doing?
He was the head trainer for their down in Florida for their developmental program. And a fine bunch that was, too. Bo James and Tom Pritchard are very good friends. I talked to Tom. Matter of fact, I hadn't talked to him in years. We talked to him on the phone when we were in Mobile. He was talking to Bo, and I walked in the room, and he handed me the phone. But he was telling Bo the story, and Bo told us the Harley Race went down to Florida to the training school where WWE had their developmental thing. And I think they had 60 people there, 50 people there, how many it was. And they asked, Pritchard asked them, said, does anybody know who this guy is other than when he was King of the Ring in WWE? Do y'all know anything else he ever did? And out of all the people that were in that room, there were only two people that knew he was the NWA World Champion about 7-8 different times.
That's sad.
One of them was Steamboat's kid, and one of them was Rotundo's kid. Those were the two. The rest of them had no clue who he was. I would have been glad to attest to the fact he's the meanest white man I've ever met in my life.
Well, what would Tom do?
Don't know. His brother Bruce is one of the head consulting people over at TNA. Maybe he'll go there. I don't know. Bo said he's got some neck and back issues, but he said he still got up and went to work every day, and he said he got in the ring, worked with those guys every day, so I don't know where he'll go or what he'll do from here.
That's the sad part about only two groups running. What do you do?
Yeah, Bo may be listening tonight. He may have some more information. He can holler at us, but I seen that today, and it just I don't know. It bothers me that, and we talk about this a lot. You know, we're guys work, bust their butt, go to work hurt. You know, give everything they got to try to do the best they can, and then, well, sorry, kid, we don't need you anymore.
Yep.
What's that? Yeah, but I mean, look at the years of experience, just the knowledge and the thoughts in his head. You know, the angles that they come up with and stuff like that, but they don't. You know, it doesn't match what their comedy writers want to write as an angle anymore. So, you know, you're old fashioned, and you know. But I did one of the things I heard this past Monday night, and I couldn't tell you what the show was like because I don't watch it. But this Monday night is the lowest ratings that they've had for a Monday night in 15 years, and now they're expanding to 3 hours.
Yeah, they're going to 3 hours. I saw that. Well, you know, you go to the other end of the spectrum here, and here again, I promised myself I wasn't going to knock these folks because I'm glad guys are making a living. But you go to the other end of the spectrum. Here's TNA. The big deal now with them is they've hired Brooke Hogan. You know, now tell me what she brings to the table as far as wrestling is concerned. Because her job is supposed to be some sort of consultant or whatever. I mean, I just...
I don't know if that's that or they're just using her as an on character, and that's just the storyline that they're using. Because she certainly couldn't possibly... Of course, I haven't watched TNA either, so I don't know what their show is.
I don't know what they do either. I've never watched it, so I don't know.
I can't imagine. I don't know. As far as I'm concerned, other than on Thursday nights when we talk about it, the business is dead to me. I hate to sound that way, but it's just what they have now, what they present now, is nothing I recognize. It's nothing I'm interested in.
Well, that's the whole thing, you know.
And it's just a shame because you've got a lot of second and third generation guys coming through the ranks. You've got Dustin's kid. You've got Steamboat's kid. You've got Rotundo's kid. You've got DiBiase's got, what, two or three kids that are doing it? And I have no clue. You know, they could learn to work the way their fathers do. Of course, it's a lot of blame falls just as much on the fans to me. I mean, they're not interested in that stuff. They've shown that they'd rather watch New Jack jump off of a balcony and go through, you know, 40 dozen light bulbs for his $10 or whatever it was he earned. You know, they'd rather see that than somebody get in there and work hard and tell the story. So, I'm not interested in what they're presenting nowadays because I can't watch it. I cannot watch it.
So you're telling me that Monday night show is going to go to 3 hours?
It's going to 3 hours, yep. We're on the USA Network. Sure is.
They can't hold people for 2 hours.
Nope.
Well, you know, nothing lasts forever, gentlemen.
Well, yeah, you're right. And it's evolved into what it is due to a lot of different things. And you know, it'll eventually evolve into something else. You know, I mean, I don't know what, but I don't know. I sure do miss. I miss being a kid, going to the matches on Friday nights, and just absolutely couldn't wait for the bell to ring. I mean, I miss that.
Well, you look back in the day, Bobby. I mean, when you actually got in it. Well, Mike got in it, and the business was rocking and rolling, you know.
Yeah.
You know, Georgia was on fire, the Carolinas, everywhere. You thought that would never go away.
No.
How could it? And you look back, and you couldn't believe that it did.
Maybe it's me, but I don't understand the reach behind it. And again, who knows how businessman's mind works. Why would you want to take a business that is thriving in hundreds, literally hundreds of cities across the country, across the world? I mean, you know, you've got Australia, Japan, you know, Europe, Middle East, South Africa, all these. You know, these places were thriving and employing hundreds of thousands of guys. And why would you want to cut it down to where you're working, you know, four times a week, three times a week with 50, 60 guys?
It makes no sense, does it?
No. I mean, you know, I know he doesn't want it. He wanted to change it from being a pseudo sport, which is what it was when we were all in it, to being a road show of some sort, a vaudeville show that travels from town to town, and then there's a big television production once a month, and then his TV program, he wanted to turn it into that, you know. But, you know, why take something that was worked successfully for 100 years or more, and had, like I said, was successful all across the country? Okay, granted, maybe, you know, you wanted to have the biggest promotion, but buy the other promotions as they were and keep the structure in place. You know, keep the guys working, you know, and otherwise you end up with what you got now. You got guys that, you know, they bring them up, they have somebody totally has no clue what the wrestling business was supposed to be about or was about. You know, okay, well, let's see. This looks like a neat costume. Let's put him in this costume, give him this name, and give him these things to say each week.
But you know, when
three weeks he's not getting over, let's release him and try something else. But this doesn't matter.
But you're right, Mike. He could have still run the whole country and kept territories.
Yep. Yep.
But he didn't. But you know, you start monkeying with stuff, you know, it's like they're trying to monkey with professional football.
Yep.
They go fool around and run that.
Exactly.
You know, they talk about it. I mean,
did any of us ever think professional wrestling would be gone?
No.
You know, did it be one territory or one promoter? I mean, I really don't count TNA and Ring of Honor and bless them, they're trying, but, you know, they're so far in McMahon's shadow, there's, you know, there's no way.
Well, you look at nothing to do with wrestling, but you look at history, every major empire that the world has ever known has never been destroyed by an outside force. They've always destroyed themselves.
Yes, sir.
And that's what's going to happen here eventually. You know, it was an ego thing. It was a power thing. I mean, the guy's got more money than he's ever going to spend. But, you know, it's just, like I say, I'm glad the guys that are working are making decent money. I mean, I hope they're saving it, because some of the crazy stuff they're doing, they're going to be in a wheelchair by the time they're 40. But I don't understand it. Never will. I don't think any of us will.
But, you know, you talk about... Go ahead, Mike.
I'm sorry, Jim, but the sad part to me is you look at guys like, and I even though they've both been around a while, and I still consider them young guys. Guys like Terry Lawler, Kyle Matthews, you know, they're never going to have a chance to, you know, I mean, they're making a living doing what they're doing, but they're struggling to do it. But they're never going to have a chance to be, you know, what a Jerry Oath was, or what a Harley Race was, or somebody like that. Because everything is so focused, if you don't, and I mean, and that's the mindset of today's fans too. When you try and talk about the past, you know, you tell about somebody that you know, 20, 25 years ago, that was a great wrestler, worked all over the country, and held title. I never saw him on cable TV, so he must not have been very good. You know, that's their mentality. If they didn't work for WCW or WWF, then well, they weren't anybody. Instead, they think people like the Road Warriors, since they were on cable TV, were the greatest tag team that ever existed. And I'm like, please,
exactly.
Give me a break.
But, you know, you talk about traveling road shows. If you look at any professional sport, baseball, they're traveling road shows.
But they've got a home base, too.
Yeah, exactly. Pro football, they're traveling road shows.
Yeah.
NASCAR, traveling road shows. But, you know, you can't monkey with these things of, you know, you start monkeying with baseball and this thing with the concussions in football, and they go, you know, guys are scared to hit guys anymore. And I fault that on the NFL for not getting with NASA or somebody and come up with a helmet, and don't tell me they can't do it.
Don't and everything you just mentioned there, Jerry, has a farm system. It has a feeder system.
Thank you, Bobby Summons.
You got minor league ball teams all over the country. You know, and you go back to the territory days, and you know, it just depends on who they were and who got pushed. But you could look at a crew. I mean, you come into Georgia, and we at any one time had 25, 30 guys here. You could look at that 25, 30 guys. It didn't take a rocket scientist to say, this guy's got talent. He something could be done with him. Then the other guy, well, he's okay, but he's never going to be more than a mid-card guy.
Right.
I mean, you know, you just, some people, we refer to it as they had it. You know, whatever it was, you could look at them and tell. And, you know, it didn't take, Dusty's a great example, didn't take a great body to be a star. You just had to have the personality. You know, Zulu had a great body. But Zulu was never going to make a dime, and, you know,
nope. That's
just the way it was. You know, but they all those things you mentioned have feeder systems. And now you're never going to know what guy's got great talent. Kyle Matthews, God love him, and he stayed with us. He hung with me for a couple of days out in Vegas, and he got that award, and I was very proud of him. But I told Kyle, I said, buddy, your body's only got so many bumps in it. I said, you know, you can only do so much for so long. You know, pace yourself. And I told him, I said, your biggest drawback from ever making it to New York, I think, is you're 100 pounds too light.
But see, no matter what kind of kid he is, that's like talking to a wall.
Yeah.
They don't want to hear what we got to say.
Yeah. Well, Kyle does listen. That's the good part. And I don't know if he'll listen to me or not, but I don't want him to kill himself. You know, the weekend we've been. Let me give you his weekend, Jerry. Before we talk about all these trips, he worked a show in New Jersey on Friday night. He was back in Georgia and worked a show Saturday night. He worked a show Sunday afternoon in Warner Robins, and then caught a 10:30 red eye from here to Vegas. When we got up at 8 o'clock to eat breakfast the next morning, he was up with us. Now, mind you, Kyle's only 25, maybe 24, 25, 26, something like that. You know, I was young and dumb at 25 and 26 and thought I was Superman, too. But I'm now 57, and I'm paying for that.
Let's forget about the Vegas run. How much did he make doing that?
Oh, I don't know.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't have any answers.
I don't either. There's not any. But, their one training facility for WWE is in Florida. And they just fired their head trainer, so I don't know what direction they're going to take or where they're going. But I don't know.
Guys, I hate to cut it short, but I just got a call from the office in Florida from my boss, so about 1:00. It's too late to call it back, so I need to jump off here and call.
That's fine, guys.
Well, I understand that.
I appreciate it as always, guys. I don't say it enough, but thank you very much. It's a pleasure for me to not only get to keep going on the radio by two legends every week, but all you guys, my friends, is very important to me, and I certainly appreciate you guys. I appreciate the show. Sometimes I just don't have the time to prepare as well as I need to, but it's fun
it's
either
still
way.
Fun, regardless.
Yeah, me and Jerry's been talking about that. You'll get your letter in the mail. Don't worry about it.
I'll be fired.
No, we're not going to fire you because nobody else will work for what you work for. So. Guys, I've enjoyed it. Y'all have a great week.
Oh, yeah, be
all
careful,
right.
Guys.
See you. Good night.
Bye-bye.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast. Production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.